My name is Kevin. I'm an alcoholic. And very grateful to be here. My sobriety date is October 31st, 1996. And my home group is Midtown Group. And this is very exciting for me. I almost feel like I can put a little feather in my cap now because my sponsor has spoken here. My wife has spoken here. I feel like I can finally say, you know, like, yeah, I've been out there to Madison. I spoke. You know, it was really nice. it was a beautiful ride. It was a beautiful ride. And this came about because I got to invite Billy to come to speak out to my home group. And I was nervous about that. Since I was a couple months sober, I have enjoyed so much being involved in AA service events. And it has just really taken on a meaning in my sobriety that I still to this day blows me away. I just love it. And I've loved having some service commitments inside my home group. But the one that I never even so much as thought about standing up for was the speaker getter. I've had a couple chair positions in the past, but I was so nervous. My home group is really large, and I was so nervous to get speakers for that meeting. And a couple months ago, we had a group conscious, and I'm sitting next to a friend of mine who's 15 years sober, and he gives me the nudge, you know. The position comes up, and he's like, you know, I think you'd be really good at doing that. You should think about standing up for it. I was like, oh, my gosh, you know. I sort of faced this, like, you know, cross the road. But fortunately, I guess, grateful to have that opportunity. And Billy was the first person that I got to ask to speak. And I was so nervous about, you know, greeting, you know, he missed the turn coming there. And I'm thinking, I'm blowing the first one here. But it was beautiful because Billy already knew everybody, and everybody already knew Billy, you know. So, I mean, all the people he's had come out here, and he came right in, and everyone really just warmed up to him. As a matter of fact, once he walked in the door, I just had to stand there. People just repeatedly, one after another, kept coming up to him. I didn't even get the opportunity to really talk to him much. But I'm really thankful that it led to this opportunity. This is special, and I really appreciate it. I'm going to tell my story in a general way, what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. I was raised in really a wonderful family. We moved a couple times. I grew up in Charlotte, lived in West Virginia for a year, and we lived in Maryland since I was 10 years old. And my father was very successful. He was in the death care business, and he branched out and bought his own cemetery, and I didn't have any clue what he was doing. I just knew we moved periodically, and we lived in nice homes and went to good schools. And when I got really into sports when I was young, and he helped me do whatever we wanted to do. It was really great. It was really great. My brother and I would fight like brothers, and we would do these remote control cars together, you know, and I thought my brother was just amazing because he knew how to put these things together, and I didn't have a clue, you know. And honestly, we had a great childhood. As we got a little older, my brother started to get in a little bit of trouble. And then he started to get in a lot of trouble. And then he could not get out of trouble. And he was 13, 14, 15, 16, 17. And I'm watching. I'm 4 years behind him. And I'm watching everything he's doing. Periodically, he tells me little things. You know, I'm doing this. I'm drinking this. I'm partying. I could see him. You know, I could see him walk off into the woods with his kids, you know, with his friends, smoking cigarettes and drinking and stuff. But I'm not really fully in tune with what's going on. I just know I'm hearing the fights with my family. Then he would go away for a couple days. He would go to facilities. He would go to psychiatric institutes. Then I'd get the phone calls. You know, is this the Rowe residence? Yes. Well, we're calling to report that Jeffrey Rowe is AWOL from Psychiatric Institute of Washington. And I mean, I was basically on the sidelines. What I was doing was still, you know, I was like playing sports. I was 11, 12, 13 years old, and I was pretty much not, you know, involved in anything. But there was as crazy as what I was watching. I wanted to know what was going on. And the second he gave me an opportunity to find out, I was on it. He said, just out of the blue, literally one day, he said, "You want to know? You want to see what I've been doing?" You know? And I was like, yes. You know? And I mean, maybe that's one of the things that started me off on a different path. Because if any normal person was watching the amount of trouble he was getting in and the amount of disharmony he was causing in my family, maybe a normal person would steer away from that. I was almost attracted to it, you know. I wanted to know what he was doing, what he was getting into. And he was getting high and he was drinking. That's what he was doing. He introduced me to it, and I had that infatuation. I wanted to know. I wanted to do it again. I was 13 when he introduced me to it. And I didn't get drunk or high, but I got a taste of it, and I wanted to know. I wanted to know what it was about. And shortly thereafter, I got to get drunk for the first time, and I absolutely loved it. I just loved it. And I can relate to what people talk about when the people in the room change, and the feeling and the way they felt changed. And suddenly I realized what was very uncomfortable, because I was with people I didn't really know, was getting very, very comfortable. You know, I just really felt like, I'm warming up to this. I see why my brother was into this so much. This is good. And I just had a good time. Nothing bad happened. I was 13 years old. But I definitely got drunk. And I really, really liked it. And the next day, I just wanted to know when we were going to get to do it again. And that was it. That was it. It did something for me. And it wasn't that I felt like I was coming from some horrific background. I just absolutely loved what happened to me. And the way I felt around those people, it just did something for me. That started for me. For the next 4 years, I did whatever I could, whenever I could, however I could, and I tell you, I didn't get very far. I really didn't get very far. I got to the point where I was drinking as much as I could drink, whenever I could get it. Which, at the time, it was easier for me to get drugs than it was alcohol. So I started doing a lot of drugs, too. And I loved those, too. But what I really loved was getting my hands on enough alcohol that I didn't have to worry about anybody asking, you know, are we going to save some for tomorrow? Are we going to save some for later? Are we going to save some for the people? Don't, you know, slow down. Take it easy. I hated it. I really couldn't stand that. And so it seemed like I always wound up in those few pockets of people that just wanted to do what I wanted to do the way I wanted to do it. And those circles generally were pretty small. Three or four people that just wanted to get messed up like I did. And my favorite, my absolute favorite, was if I could get so drunk that going somewhere wasn't even an option. I could just stay right there and not have to move, maybe get a little sick. Sometimes that just happens. But I could just be and just not have to go anywhere. So I wound up, it was usually in my basement or my friend's basements, at those little coffee tables that would be off in the corner or something like that. That was my favorite spot. And I could just, I would look forward. I'd be out with friends. We'd go to parties. I'd do things. I would just, you know. Is there a basement somewhere around here? Do they have a basement? Is there anything going on upstairs in a bedroom? Is there anything going on outside on the back, you know? And it seemed like that was always where I wound up. And I would do stupid things. You know, the more I loved drinking and getting high, the more stupid things I'd get involved in. Because I really thought, well, I didn't just think. I mean, I believed it. I absolutely believed for certain that I was one of those people. This is what made me special. That I was one of those people that could drink as much as I want to drink, live any way I want to live, and get away with it. And so all I had to do, because I had the formula already figured out, I had to do well on the outside, you know, so I looked okay, so I seemed to act okay, so I would fit those outside characteristics that you're looking for someone that's doing okay. Well, I was 16 years old. So that's pretty simple. I had to do okay in school. I had to be involved in some other activities. I had to maybe play a sport and, you know, not come home smelling like alcohol. I'd come home smelling like everything else, but I just wouldn't come home smelling. The trouble that my brother got into turned my mom's nose into the most sensitive alcohol smeller you could ever possibly imagine. So you could not come home with alcohol on you, but I could come home with everything else, you know, and I'd have my travel kit at all times. I even carried potpourri in my glove box because you never knew and you might have to rub a little piece of potpourri on you. It really works amazingly well. And it's different than cologne. Cologne is so obvious, you know. Potpourri has a different, it's not quite as assuming like, oh, you just doused yourself in cologne. People don't expect you to douse yourself in potpourri. The Visine, gum, I mean, you know, the essential travel kit. And I just couldn't come home smelling like alcohol. So if I was going to really get drunk, I had to stay out. But everything else on the outside had to be right. And so I really worked. It is crazy. It sounds crazy to talk about it. I did every single thing I could do to fit the part on the outside. So I got involved in student government. Got really involved in student government. Got so involved in student government, I was elected student body president. This is when I was now 17. Got involved in the National Honor Society. Loved the National Honor Society. You know, I was now like a senior member of the National Honor Society. Got involved in drawing the line on underage drinking. Great. This is a multi-school committee that pulls together like a half dozen schools in the area, and we would conference on how we could draw the line on underage drinking. Have these little workshops and bring the information back to our student body. I got involved in SAD, Students Against Drunk Driving, you know, just the local chapter at my school. Got involved in the Key Club. It was one more thing to sign up for, you know, no problem. Got involved in the Homecoming Committee, which, you know, again, just another little. Got involved in my sports team. I played golf. I still love golf. But I got involved in golf. I was captain of the golf team. I, as ridiculous as it is, I did every single thing I could do to try and look on the outside like I'm doing the next right thing. Well, little did you know, the items that I was carrying around with me, the way I was behaving, was just a heap of trouble that I could get into was growing and growing and growing and growing. You know, pockets bulging full of stuff, things rattling around in the back of the car. And I was, I mean, the things I strived for, one of the things that gave me the sickest satisfaction of all was when my friend's parents would say things like, why don't you see what Kevin's doing tonight? You know? Why don't you hang out with Kevin? You know, Kevin's doing this and Kevin's doing this. I would sit in the kitchen while listening to a mom tell this to her kid, thinking like, oh, you know, God, this is beautiful. This is beautiful. Because I was doing more bad things than anybody. Except for those couple people that were with me. I mean, I got to be like my brother. I couldn't stop screwing up. I just hadn't gotten caught yet. But I just couldn't stop. And the things I was doing were getting stupider and stupider, and the amount of trouble I could get into. So I was doing stuff every single day. When I woke up, at the end of school, after school, golf turned out being the greatest excuse, because golf takes so long to play. So all I had to do was say, I got to, you know, practice with the golf team, or, you know, won't be back till dark. So that is like 4 hours after school to get drunk and just messed up, not even wondering where I am. My mom not even wondering where I am. My parents separated eventually, and my dad lived out of the area, so it was just my mom. So golf was the greatest excuse. You know, I would, my car, I had this Jeep. Now the Jeep too, you know. The Jeep was a bit of a stretch, because the Jeep had to match the bad image. So the Jeep had black windows. You couldn't see in it if you wanted to. Had it raised up, You know, this is actually a pretty cool Jeep. You know, I had big tires on it. I loved it. But the back had a sticker. Instead of Farfig Nugent, it said fucking puking. And it had this little guy with like a beer. 16 years old in high school, right? Had beer flying out of this guy's hand. And I'd get out pretty much dressed just like I am now. I'd pull in blasting rap music. And then I'd get out just like this, wearing my embroidered letter sweater. You know, throw my golf clubs over my shoulder, you know, go to the golf course. And, I mean, it was just an absolute joke. That's really how I looked at it. It was a joke because I thought I had everybody, you know, fooled, for lack of a better description. That I really, that just hammered home for me that I can drink however I want to drink and get away with it, you know, and do whatever drugs I wanted to do and get away with it. Until I got in a little bit of trouble. And that is really threw a big wrench in my plan. My ego gets out of control in sobriety. So out of control probably doesn't do it justice the way it was when I was out there drinking. It was just in another orbit. The way I thought of myself and the way I thought I could get away with stuff. And I would say things like to my friends, the people that would say, you know, don't you think you ought to chill out? You know, you're going to get in trouble. And all that. I would say things. I'd be dead serious. I'd say, you really think I'm going to get in trouble? You think I just accidentally wound up, you know, being this successful? That is really how I thought about myself. And I was dead serious. I'd say, you really think I'm going to get in trouble? Well, I got into a lot of trouble. That was the bottom line. I had a lot of things on me, and I was making a lot of really poor decisions. I had a couple close calls. I mean, we would do these things called midnight missions. We'd get as drunk as we could get. We'd get whatever drugs in us we could get. And then we'd just take off on the road. And we would be targeting places like your front yard. If you didn't have a fence, I was in your front yard. And I was doing donuts. I was in my Jeep. And I was doing donuts. And I was ripping up your yard. I mean, I was doing whatever I could. We'd just go out. We'd go out far enough away so that we weren't right in the middle of suburbia. And so the streetlights weren't going to catch us. And we were going for your front yard, your backyard, your side, whatever we could get the truck on. Until I pulled out. You know, I saw a break in the fence. I whipped in. And it was gorgeous. And it looked like a golf course. I wouldn't do it to a golf course because I did actually like golf. But this place was amazing. An immaculate field. And I mean, so I am just gunning it. You know, I'm doing donuts all the way around. I'm seeing these huge pipes. So I'm crushing the pipes as I'm driving. Turns out the pipes are like sort of like an aluminum. So I'm just crunching the pipes as I drive around, making huge laps and donuts and tearing this place up. Then I see a car coming out in the field, coming right at me. Well, it turns out I had picked the wrong yard. It was not a yard. It was a turf farm. There was a reason why it was so beautiful. Those were irrigation pipes I was running over, and I was ripping up this guy's, you know, crop, for lack of a better word. I mean, I was in a turf farm and caused a ton of damage. And got busted. And they took, the foreman took my license, took my registration. Of course, we had thrown out drugs and bottles as if that's not going to stick out. I mean, this is a perfectly manicured field as far as you can see. You can see a Ziploc bag from a mile away, you know, but I think that's a different story. Right now, this guy's really got me. And just lucky. I mean, really lucky. I showed up there, and I begged and begged and begged. And I showed up in, like, work clothes. And I said, I will do whatever I have to do if I get caught. Because meanwhile, I got all this act going on. I mean, this would have been the most, you know, drastic, you know, exposing catch. You know, this is what Kevin's really doing. You know, throwing all the stuff out of his car, ripping up people's houses and yards, and the guy let me pay as much money as I could pay, and he gave my license back and let me go. So I had a couple of close calls and hadn't gotten caught. A couple of close calls with my parents, too, with my mom. I mean, just a couple close ones, but nothing quite yet. And so what's happening in my senior year of high school is I'm either drinking or getting high every day, several times throughout the day. And And I am, my circle of friends has gotten pretty small. You know, there's really only two or three friends that I could actually really tell them what happened last night. You know, because I started to have a few occasions where I didn't know what happened last night. You know, and I certainly didn't have any friends saying, "Oh, that's a blackout." Very common characteristic of alcoholics. You know, I didn't know. No one was using the term blackout. You know, what I remember was the night wasn't going right. I kept drinking and drinking and drinking and drinking, and then boom. You know, but the night continued, and I was not, you know, not there for it. That happened a couple times that I can specifically remember. And so my circle of friends is getting really small. And I show up. I mean, I actually did a pretty uncharacteristic thing. I showed up in a very public place with a lot of alcohol, a lot of paraphernalia, just a ton, a duffel bag of illegal stuff. And I got turned in. And so every story I told myself about how I thought my case was different, it was not different at all. You know, I mean, I was the idiot of the year. And I had to do every single thing that I had bragged about and boasted about. I had to eat it. You know, the school made me jump through a ton of hoops, had to get up in front of everybody and tell them what I'd really been doing and all this junk. But the truth was, part of me was loving that. I got a ton of trouble, and I got scared out of my mind. But when I was given a path to get out of trouble, I was like, okay, you know, I can play this game. I'll do this. I'll do the school thing. I'll make it very public. I'll do the rehab. I'll tell everyone how rehab is going. I'll get involved. I'll really get involved in all these committees. It didn't pan out that way. I mean, the school wasn't that foolish. But fortunately, they gave me an opportunity to get out of trouble. And this is basically what they said. You know, you got to go to rehab. You need to see a social worker. You need to see a school counselor. You know, we need to get updates every month, every couple weeks on exactly what you're doing and how it's going. I had good grades, and I had done a couple really genuinely good things, I guess, for the school. I had already gotten into a college that I wanted to go to in North Carolina, Wake Forest, and they made me call. They made me go visit them and tell them the truth about everything I had been doing. So my little school resume got wiped clean in a second, and the school said, "Well, you know, thanks, but no thanks. Good luck in your recovery." So, you know, at the time it seemed like a big deal. Again, probably one of the greatest blessings I could ever, you know, hard to even put words to it, how those scenarios have been able to redirect my life into a place that I couldn't have done on my own, you know. So they made me jump through a couple hoops, and again, I really treated it, you know, as egotistically and obnoxiously as everything else I was doing. You know, I'll get through this just like I got through everything else. I got it figured out. I'll blah, 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 blah. I didn't even get to my first day of rehab. And a friend came up to me who I had previously was one of those people in that really small circle. But he was constantly getting in so much trouble, he would just vanish every month, month and a half. And you wouldn't know if he was just laying low or if he'd got in trouble again. So we didn't think much of it. We just knew sometimes he was with us, sometimes he wasn't. And he came up to me. And, you know, this would be a very non-cool thing to do. You know, this is a person that I've been partying with for the last 4 years. And he stuck his neck out and said, you know, "I've been going to AA meetings. And I know you got in a lot of trouble. And I thought maybe you'd want to come along." And I perked right up. I said, "Yeah, that sounds good. Let's do it." And the only reason I did that was for the same reason I was jumping through all these other hoops. Because I was willing to do whatever it was going to take to get out of trouble. And that was exactly what brought me into AA, the desire to get out of trouble. I had fear for what there was to lose. I was afraid I was going to lose it, you know. I could have gotten in a lot more legal trouble. The school decided not to go that route. They decided to give me. They literally confronted me and said, "This is what we know." And they just boom, 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 boom. And they gave me the rest of the day to figure out what I was going to do about it. That was unbelievably generous. So I had the day to clean out my car and clean out my pockets and clean out and tell my friends to get away from me. You know, I'm done. he brought me to an AA meeting. And again, I'm there, you know. My idea of AA is this truly is where losers wind up, you know. If you fail at everything else, and you are now officially at the end of your road with no more upward potential, then you go to AA. And that's where everyone comes together. And like my brother went to a few AA meetings. And so he just shared a few things with me that I took. You're just trading one addiction for another. You stop drinking and doing all that crap and you pick up coffee and cigarettes. It was just a bunch of people sitting in really small smoky rooms talking about themselves. And so that was what I brought. You know, I already knew everything about AA. And I came into a meeting that was probably about maybe 70 or so people, and there were a lot of young people in the room. And it was there was a leader, and the leader led for, I don't know, maybe 20 minutes, and then it was a discussion. And I didn't hear a word. I mean, I spent the whole room just going person to person, you know, as to why I am not like you, why I'm better than you, why I'm different than you, why you're stuck in here, and this is not for me. I was 17 years old, and I'm thinking I'm going to portray some sort of message. The basket comes around to me, and I pull out a wad of money. Now, mind you, they're $1 bills. But I start counting the $1 bills into the basket. And I say, how much should I put in? You know, thinking people are noticing me. You know, of course they are. I mean, unbelievable. That is really what I brought in here. You know, I was so sure I knew what was going on that in actuality I damn near missed the whole thing. I mean, I just didn't have a clue, you know. And after that meeting, there was this guy sitting next to me that you could just tell he was up to something. He was seemingly so happy to be in that meeting, it was like he was buzzing. I mean, you could just tell he had his planner sitting right in front of him. And it was like he was just raring to go the second that meeting was over. And sure enough, that meeting was over. He pops up, grabs his planner, he's like, "Hi, I'm CJ. You know, what's your name?" And gets my name and number. He says, "Let me introduce you to some people." And he literally drags me around the room. And I mean, I was this tall then, but I swear to you, I felt like I was talking to giants. You know, because he dragged me around that room and introduced me to every person I'd just been sitting there for the last hour judging. You know, why this one was a loser, and this one was even more of a loser, and this one was never going to do anything, and why this one is destined to nothing forever. And I mean, every judgment I could think of. There were a lot of people in the room, and he dragged me around and introduced me to as many of them as he possibly could. And that was uncomfortable. I mean, that was seriously uncomfortable. And I mean, thank God, I feel so lucky to have come or to have been introduced to an active home group, because a lot of the people he introduced me to that night are still going to be in my home group meeting in an hour and a half. You know, that is just awesome to be able to look around those people and know how many of them were there from the first night. And I remember I got introduced to my sponsor that night, and I remember the first time I saw my sponsor, and he was one of those people that just automatically really, really intimidated me. You know, the way he was dressed, the way he looked, the way he walked. I mean, everything about him intimidated me. And that night, I got introduced to him. And kind of unusual. I mean, usually, you know, I'd say people might ask someone to be their sponsor. This person was introduced to me as my sponsor. And still to this day, I hardly ever see that happen in my home group. Why it happened right then, I have no idea. Someone really thought they knew what they were doing. Damn, they were right too, because I was like, no! And I didn't know how it worked, but it was like, okay, you know, this is going to be interesting. And I can't probably describe to you any better how I was when I was, other than to say that I was so sure I knew what was happening that I just was missing everything. I mean, I was just barely there. And I was coming around because I knew I was kind of on the clock to get out of trouble. And I knew the school, you know, wanted to see some results. My parents were crushed. They wanted to see some results. And I'll do this AA thing for as long as it takes. And that was where, in AA is where something started to happen for me. What happened in rehab was informative. And, you know, they did urinalysis. So certainly there was a practical benefit to that. They taught about some of the educational aspects of alcoholism and drug addiction. And maybe I remember a fraction of it. Really, I treated them like homework assignments. I would go in and I would listen and I would jot down my notes and I would do the little assignments. And then they had the group discussion and I would participate. I would say, I went to an AA meeting, you know, and I would say what happened. And little did I know, I mean, I just kind of assumed people go to rehab, they get some things straightened out. I didn't know, I mean, almost nobody in that rehab wound up staying sober. Every now and then I still see this one guy and this one lady that were in that group. And it's a pretty big group. And it's almost like, you know, oh my gosh, it's really cool when you see him and you remember where you saw him, because so many of those people just were in and out and in and out and in and out, just like we see today. I just didn't know what I was seeing. But something was happening in AA, and it was different than, it was definitely different than what was happening in that rehab. And different than what was happening when I was talking with that social worker. I mean, again, that was just talking about me, and my ideas and my thoughts. And I mean, I didn't have any good ideas and thoughts. And the more I thought they were good, the worse they probably were, you know. In AA, in meetings, people were sharing about their experience with alcoholism. And those things that I was, the way I felt when I was just with, finally with those couple people that just wanted to drink the way I wanted to drink, the way it made me feel, the lack of control that I had when I was drinking, the inability to have practically any control, stop how much I would drink, where I would wind up, what would happen, whether I would black out, whether I wouldn't, where I would wind up, what trouble I might get into, what great idea I might have next. The circle of friends getting smaller and smaller, the blacking out, the feeling like, I remember this one guy shared about almost feeling like he had some sort of sixth sense as to where, like, the serious partying was going on. And I was like, yes, you know, I have that too. And, I mean, these weren't things that I couldn't have articulated it until I heard someone else explain it. But then when people were sharing about it in AA meetings, there was those handful of things that I just rattled off. I was like, yeah, I mean, I couldn't have said it better. That's exactly my experience. And, I did not relate to everything. I mean, I certainly did not relate to everything. But I tell you, one of the things that I did relate to, that would have been one of the things I held onto my back, that I would have held in my back pocket, is that I probably did more drugs than I drank. I had a lot more access to them, and I probably did more. It would be impossible to measure that, but I probably did more. And would that make me less of an alcoholic or not an alcoholic? Because that might have been true for me. Until you hear people in meetings, I mean, people in my home group where there's a lot of young people share that kind of stuff, and it opened my eyes. I mean, really, like, I am not unique. And then someone shares about how they were the student body president. And it's like, God, I got nothing on these people. And people share about how they were the captain of their sports team, and I thought if I just got good grades, that everyone would leave me alone. And I'm thinking, damn, you know, I had all these ideas. I'm thinking I'm some sort of special case because I figured out some way to manipulate people that is no different than what most everyone else was doing in their own way, you know? Trying to just arrange the show and the people involved, and I mean, just get as many pieces going the way I wanted to so that it's going to be just the way we're doing. Of course, it never works out. You know, but the more I heard people share about that, and me, I started to seriously relate. And what my sponsor was doing, I remember I picked up my sponsor, and he had someone with him. And now this is a good example. I mean, I don't have a clue what's going on. But this is what I think. The guy that he had with him was a little bit older. And I didn't think to ask who he was. I just assumed Arno's the sponsor. Arno sponsors people. Arno sponsors this guy too. And he let the guy sit in the front seat. And I thought, well, that was nice of Arno. I guess the guy's older. He let him sit in the front seat. That was pretty thoughtful. And they're just drilling me with questions. And I'm thinking, oh, these guys are so nice. They want to know about me. You know? And I'm just talking to answering their questions. And I don't have a clue. It turns out that was his sponsor. And he brought him in the car because they were really trying to get to me. They were trying to 12-step me. They were trying to ask me questions about my drinking. Trying to help me understand alcoholism. Trying to help me understand powerlessness, unmanageability. And I didn't. I mean, so little was seeping through with me. But I look back on those things, and they warm me up. You know, I think about the times when people were sticking out their hand for me, when as obnoxious and egotistical and know-it-all and image. I mean, it was just about looking the part, and that was it. And here were people actually genuinely trying to reach out and help me. And after a couple months, something started to really sink in. And this is what it was for me. Enough of those things that people had shared about in meetings I could genuinely relate to. It was beyond this, you know, yeah, I kind of sort of related to that. It moved into that where it was like, man, if I could have put that in words just like that, I would have said it the same way. And it was only just, it was those handful of things that really resonated with me, that I knew I might have what these people have, you know. And I called myself an alcoholic from walking in the first day, because I presume that's what you're supposed to do, because everyone else says they're an alcoholic. But something started to really sink in. That I started to really believe, not just that I have what you guys have, but that something is working in your life. If it's working for you, then it can probably work for me too. And that was what I got out of my first couple months of sobriety. And that was almost like beside my best efforts, you know, because anything that I was doing was definitely counterproductive. You know, it was really the power of AA. Something greater than myself was really starting to intervene, you know. And this is the form that I think it came in. People like my sponsor, bringing his sponsor along with him, drilling me with conversation in the car, trying to get information out of me and talk to me and try and help me. People saying, you know, what are you doing before the meeting? Well, my plans have started to get pretty scarce, because all my old friends, they started to get further and further away. And so that, you know, if the old friends were getting further away, and those were the people that I was certain I would never be able to let go of. Well, that definitely proved not to be true. They were able to let go of me pretty quickly. And I was able to let go of them eventually. So people wanted to know, what are you doing before the meeting? And I didn't, you know, my plans were getting slimmer and slimmer. So we'd meet up at Starbucks. We'd meet up at the Italian restaurant down the street. And before I knew it, I was doing this meeting before the meeting thing, you know, like 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 nights a week. I was loving it, you know. And then, what are you doing after the meeting? And I mean, it literally is people... Literally, and I drove, my parents let me keep that Jeep, which was really, really nice of them. And so, you know, I would get to drive places, but a lot of time they would say, no, I'll come pick you up, you know, or let's ride together. Leave your car here. Let's ride together. And we'd go to these, I remember some of my friends played at an indoor soccer league, and this guy would drag me around. And while they're playing soccer, he was just telling me everything about everybody. So I could, it really did something for me too, because I started to feel a little more a part of, and I'd remember people's names the next night, and I'd start to kind of know, you know, the names of the meetings. It's like, yeah, I'll see you at choir. Yeah, I'll see you at Big Book. And I'd know where the meeting before the meetings were. And I was, something was really starting to happen for me here, because I was relating to people in the meetings. I started to feel like there's a place for me here. And I started to see that people's lives here were definitely changing, you know, because I could see it mostly in people's stories who were similar to mine. And mainly things like their life at school started to straighten out. Their life at home started to straighten out. Their life with their immediate family had been really, really bad. It started to straighten out. And all of this is happening sober. And something that on my own I had basically no experience with. The longest I could stay sober on my own was about two or so weeks. And two, maybe 3 weeks. So one guy pointed out to me, you know, asked me how long I've been sober for. I said it was coming up on 3 months. And he said, well, how long had you stayed sober for on your own? I said, oh man, I tried one time and it was like 2 weeks. And he said, so you're sober the longest you've ever been, you know. Do you think it has anything to do with AA? And, I mean, it was an automatic. You know, absolutely. I don't have anything else to credit it to. Now, you know, 6, 7, 8, whatever, 9, 10 weeks prior, I would have had some other ridiculous answer, you know. But in actuality, I had nothing. I mean, the old friends that I would never, ever let go of were gone. I wasn't doing any of the same behaviors that I was doing 4 or 5 months ago. None of these things were my ideas. These were all people that were dragging me around, reaching their hand out to me, sharing their experience. Really, like, in the car with me, driving me to a dinner, talking about how they're powerless over alcohol and their life is unmanageable. You know? Trying to help me see how I could relate, you know, maybe connect a little bit more. And a lot of people really stuck out their hands to me. And without a doubt, you know, AA really got a hold of me. And I started to come to believe that this really, if I'm an alcoholic and I'm believing that I am, that means this program is for me. And that means these steps are for me. And that means this is the remainder of these steps and this program is what I need to do if I want to live a decent life. And that really resonated me about a year sober. I'd had some great experiences. I mean, when I first got sober, I was terrible at home. My sponsor said, you know, you don't have to yell at your mom every night. And I was like, you know, okay, that's a new idea. You know, because I was being worse. You know, I'd be Mr. Happy at an AA meeting. I'd get home and I'd be like, you know, I should say, where are you? I'd be like, I was at a damn meeting. You know, the same place I was last night. Where do you think I was? That'd be the first words out of my mouth, you know? He'd say, it might have been my grand sponsor. He said, you know, why don't you just try not yelling at her tonight? You know, if you really want to, why don't you count to 10 first before you yell at her? I was like, okay, I'll try that. Sometimes I should probably try that today at home. But I, seriously, because I, it worked. You know, I went home that night, didn't yell. You know, little things started to actually, you know, other people's ideas started to actually change. And about a year sober, I had the opportunity to sponsor a guy for a little while. And we were reading through the first step in the 12 and 12. And it really rang true to me like it had not yet. And it really was that if I want to live a good life here, if I want to live a sober, meaningful life, then I need to humble myself to this program. And humble myself to this first step. And humble myself to the remainder of the program and do it as it's laid out. And that has taken on a meaning for me that it really, I think it gave some direction to my sobriety, because I really, as I had said before, I loved being involved in the activities. And I have, at different times in my sobriety, I have embraced service opportunities like it is what's giving me life. And I mean, in a really cool way. I've gotten to be involved in some things that have given me experiences. I just wanted to explode. I felt so good, you know. I mean, little things that I would never think of. Waking up before the sun comes up to make breakfast for your sober friends at a camp out. To work your tail off only just to see them devouring your breakfast. I mean, I felt like I could jump up 100 feet in the air, you know. It was like, this is so cool to feel a part of something where I am like really contributing and really involved. And I've gotten to do all sorts of fun things. I've got to be involved in conferences and different service positions inside meetings, you know. I had a couple running buddies when I was new. And my wife is sponsoring one of the girls my wife sponsors, who lives with us, if you're following that. She's one of our roommates. We have two roommates, one of the guy I sponsor and a guy she sponsors. And we love it. We're all very close. And she's sponsoring a new girl. And that new girl's friend just also got sober. And I was trying to get all the details this morning on this because I love scenario. When I got sober, it was by that friend who stuck his hand out to me. Shortly behind there, another friend of ours got sober. And then we all got to kind of get wrapped up with this new fellowship of friends and new people to meet. And really developed new friendships, new meaningful friendships. And we became running buddies. And that's what I was trying to gather from, you know, listening to these women talk this morning. You know, are they becoming running buddies? Are they going places together and doing things? Because we would get a service position and it was just that. We all just got a service position. You know, so if I had coffee on one night, and he had cleanup the next night, and then he had cleanup, and then he had set up the next night, and then I had cigarette butts the next night, we had some sort of service commitment to go to every night of the week. And I mean, it was just awesome. We were really, those things were keeping us going to meetings, keeping us involved, keeping us active. And I just, it really came to mean a lot to me. And I had some learning experiences with it too. I mean, I started love doing these things, started getting in my head, you know. I became like the service guy, you know. If something was going on, I knew about it and I was involved in it. And, oh yeah, I got the campsite. And, oh yeah, I got the church. And, oh yeah, I got the boat. And it's all, I mean, really going to my head. And I mean, so I got to remember, I still came in to AA with all the same defects I was living off of when I got here. I mean, I certainly did not change overnight. And I had an experience in sobriety where I just wanted to crawl in a hole so bad I couldn't believe it. You know, here I am, Mr. Big Shot. You know, I'm setting up events and I'm involved and you can count on me and we're going to do a boat trip on the 4th of July. And some 20-some-odd people couldn't get on the boat because I screwed up and sold too many tickets and screwed up the whole thing. The bus wasn't running. People couldn't get to the boat. We had a meeting in a room that was probably about 110 degrees. You know, we had these big, like, jet turbo fans in the back of the room, so you couldn't hear anything in the AMA meeting. Everyone was miserable. A ton of people couldn't get on the boat, and I thought, you know, I thought, I've got to go. I got to get out of here. These people will never, ever look at me the same. I could never do service again, you know. And, I mean, those experiences are worth $1 billion because, I mean, that too, talk about a wake-up call, you know, about where my head can get to and how I think I'm so important and look at the things I do and why I do service. That was like a lightning wake-up call because that is not, it's not why I started to get involved in service. It's not why my sponsor does service. It's not why my home group is such a big proponent of service. It's because the truth is that I can be a small part of something that can help plan things, help set up meetings, help, you know, facilitate what was here when I got here when I was new. And I have the opportunity to be a tiny part of that. Boy, when it went to my head and start thinking that I am the one and I'm setting it up, I mean, it really was I wanted just to crawl back in that hole I came from, you know, thinking that I am just the big shot that came in here, you know, when I first got sober. So I've seen a lot of these, you know, I've seen a lot of my defects, you know, like come full circle again and again and again in sobriety. And some of them have gotten better, though. You know, some of them have definitely gotten better. I did a fourth and a fifth step with my sponsor, and that was an excellent experience. And then what I felt like I went through a ringer of the sixth and seventh step that I couldn't have possibly seen coming, you know, kind of like that service work thing. I start getting going. I think I'm running the show. I think I know what's going to make me happy. And I just get this in place, and then I'll get this in place, and then I'll get this in place. And I'm just rolling right along, you know. And then things start not working out so well. And I remember being at the World Conference in Minneapolis, losing my mind, thinking, what the hell happened to my program? You know, I was like 4 years sober. I'm thinking, I don't think I've ever worked a single step. You know, I really started to believe that. I pulled my friend aside. I'm crying to him. You know, I'm in a stadium of some 50 some odd thousand people. And I'm looking around the room thinking, there is without a doubt, I am the most miserable person in this room. You know, I mean, I was dying. I see the picture of the Minneapolis conference, and I can find myself instantly. You know, 50-some-odd thousand people, and I think, God, I was so miserable right there, you know. I'm literally watching my girlfriend cheat on me. It's happening right before my eyes, you know. And I'm dying. I am absolutely dying. I'm thinking, what is happening to my world, you know. Everything that I think is so right. And again, though, back to the steps. You know, I had more step work to do. You know, I was getting a real taste of why I need to be willing to let go of some of these defects of character. Why I really seriously need a higher power in my life. Because the outside circumstances are going to come, and they're going to go, and they're going to change, and they're going to hit me when I'm not looking, and it's going to turn some things upside down. And I remember saying to my sponsor, like, I think I might need to work all the steps again, you know? And he was like, no, you know, we just got to keep going. We just got to keep going, you know? And I took something from that experience that God, I hope. I mean, that experience, I'm talking about like almost a year of sobriety, where I felt like I really struggled. I felt like I really had lost touch with something. But really, I think the thawing out process had continued, and I thought it was just becoming more and more evident that I really need a higher power in my life. The steps are here for a reason. I need to make amends. I need to have a prayer life. I need to really investigate this meditation. I need to look at exactly what's in the steps. And I the way I started praying from that, you know, kind of time forth, it really has taken on a new meaning for me. You know, it is just a firmer belief in me today that I know I need something greater in my life. You know, and it's here. I mean, I believe it's in AA. Things have continued to happen, that some really wonderful, exciting, some challenging, some of my closest friends have drank again, you know, and some of those experiences have sort of forced me to hold on to my seat tight, you know, and get more entrenched in sponsorship, reaching out to other people, watching some of my closest friends literally walk right back, after years of sobriety, walk right back into the hell they came from. You know, be living with them at the time it happens. Just blowing me away and thinking, you know, I don't want to go back down that road. You know, I want to hold on to my seat here. I want to do whatever it takes. And I think for me today, whatever it takes is pretty much whatever AA asks. You know, with as much as I can do, life's gotten really full and it's gotten really wonderful. I have a wonderful, beautiful, amazing wife, one of the strongest women in AA I know, period. You know, some of you have probably heard her, Bridget. I think she's speaking at one of your events here coming up soon. She's amazing, an amazing example. And we have a beautiful daughter. We have another child on the way. We find out if it's a boy or a girl on Tuesday. You know, we have some beautiful things happening in our life, and then we have things that are sad and challenging and difficult. But it's okay today. You know, it's a beautiful life, and it's a beautiful sober life. And you know, I listened to a CD last night on the way home. We had a really wild last 24 hours. We were in the hospital. Bridget was sick, and you know, when you're pregnant, you got to really jump on that. The doctor was worried about her getting dehydrated, so we're back and forth, and we were in Rehoboth visiting our in-laws. It all worked out, and we were listening to a CD last night of Johnny Harris, 44 years sober. He talked about when he had back surgery, or when his back was bothering him, he didn't get to meetings for about 3 weeks. He could get to like parts of meetings and he would have to stand up in the back of the room. So maybe he was 43 years sober when this was happening. And he talked about how he went a couple weeks without meetings. He's standing in the back of the room. Started wondering, maybe I'm not an alcoholic. You know, I've been sober a long time. It's been a long time since I've had a drink. And I mean, I was there at the event when he gave that talk, but I didn't hear that. I'll tell you that. Last night, I really heard it. I thought, man, you know? I mean, even just for him to share that like that, it really did something for me last night. You know? I got to be honest, you know, about really what's going on with me. Hell, if he can do it from a podium, you know, I certainly hope I can do it with the people I sponsor and with my sponsor to do whatever it takes here to keep my seat. You know, and continue to carry the message. So it really had an effect on me, you know. Really had an effect on me. That this is where I want to be. This is what I want to be doing. And whatever's asked of me, you know, I hope I stick to it and be true to it. You know, this place has turned my, it's turned my, I don't know what my life, it has given me everything that I could possibly even think of. You know, it's given me anything I could tally up to how meaningful and beautiful my life is today. It all comes back to everything that's happened here in AA. So, I thank you. Thank you for inviting me, and thanks.